Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to be joined by Predators head coach John Hines at 7:30. We'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators with him. Two big wins in a row against the Chicago Blackhawks. So looking forward to that conversation with John Hines at 7:30. Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville joins us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Josh Heupel hiring with him. What does he think of it? Where does Tennessee go from here? All that coming up with Trey. Bruce Feldman at 9 o'clock from The Athletic, and then Hal Gill at 9:30, Preds radio analyst, getting into the Predators with him as well. So all that coming up here on the show. But, Joe, last night, some news in the AFC South. This coming from John McClain, who obviously has covered the NFL for a very long time, does a great job covering the Texans now. David Culley expected to be announced as the new head coach of the Houston Texans. Now, David Culley is 65 years old. He spent the past two seasons in Baltimore as the assistant head coach for the Ravens, also the passing game coordinator and the wide receivers coach. And David Culley, not a guy that was on a whole lot of lists in terms of potential head coaching candidates. Number one, Joe, what do you think of this hire? And number two, what do you think if you're David Culley about the prospect of coming into this situation with your first task really being trying to see if you could keep your franchise quarterback around? That's a heck of a lot to ask from a first-time head coach to say, hey, man, no pressure, but we need you to come in here and help us convince Deshaun Watson to stay. It's going to be very interesting to see how Watson responds to this hiring.
I've never seen an NFL coaching cycle with so many randos I've never heard of getting jobs.
It's unbelievable.
But, I mean, I do. I trust Charles Robinson. Friend of the show, he had a pretty good thread on Culley and how, I mean, a lot of people are huge on this guy, and his advocates include Andy Reid, not necessarily over Eric Bieniemy, who still blows me away that he doesn't have a head coaching job, and I half expect Andy Reid to say you're the head coach after they win the Super Bowl. But a lot of people, you know, big fans of his, and I guess there's a feeling that if Deshaun Watson is willing to listen, David Culley is the type of guy who, you know, could reach him, has that kind of a reach. I mean, you go back, David Culley's coaching career started as the Austin Peay running backs coach, 1978, and he's from Sparta. And he went to Vanderbilt. So you got some he's been at Middle Tennessee, he's been at Chattanooga, so there's local connection here. But yeah, like, I mean, Nick Sirianni, like, there's a bunch of people getting jobs. I mean, kneecap biter up in Detroit. I mean, what? I mean, there's some interesting hires this offseason.
I saw a stat yesterday when it came out that David Culley was going to be the hire for Houston, that he is the oldest guy to get a head coaching job for his first stop. Like, he's 65 years old. This is the first time that he's going to be an NFL head coach, and that he's the oldest man in NFL history to get a head coaching job for his first stop. Now, obviously, you've had some situations where you've had older head coaches. I mean, this past year, Romeo Crennel, older than that, and was the interim head coach of the Houston Texans. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this unfolds with Houston. And we've talked to a bunch of different people about it. Is this really salvageable? Like, does Deshaun Watson, now that a coaching hire has been made, does he sit down with David Culley? Is he willing to stick around and maybe give him a chance at this time? Or is it so far gone at this point between the ownership side of things and Deshaun Watson that it's just a lost cause at this point? And if that's the case, if I'm David Culley, I'm like, man, what am I getting myself into here with Deshaun Watson potentially being out the door? I mean, that's a heck of a head coaching job to take, knowing that in, you know, the next couple of weeks, maybe your situation looks a whole lot different than you think it will heading into it.
Well, but obviously, I mean, this guy's, you know, later in his his career, so this is his shot finally to get a head coaching job. So maybe that's part of, you know, why he was the hire. I mean, maybe just the hesitation over what is this going to look like. So I got to come in and immediately somehow talk this guy into staying, who's out, and if he is out, then what the heck is this job going to look like? So maybe this is kind of, you know, what had to happen for the Ravens. But there are a lot of people who are out there. I mean, Lewis Riddick with an impassioned endorsement of him. A lot of people are, and there are people like, there's people like that in the coaching world, you know, who they're not high profile because they haven't been head coaches or even coordinators, but they sometimes are keys to organizations. Arthur Smith was a guy with the Titans who kept getting kept by different coaches, yeah. And he was a guy very respected in the building, and it's just in the last couple of years anybody knew who the heck he was.
And speaking of Arthur Smith, we had him on the show yesterday, now head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, obviously former Titans offensive coordinator, and we asked him about another former Titans coordinator that he's bringing with him to Atlanta, Dean Pease, as a defensive coordinator with the Falcons. Here's what new Falcons head coach Arthur Smith had to say yesterday here on the show.
Well, it was a huge hire for me to be a first-time head coach. Obviously, I plan on still calling the plays, which I will. I'll still call the plays on Sunday. And you need somebody with a veteran experience. I mean, I understand what my issues are being a first-time head coach, and you need to counter that with somebody like Dean, who can run the defense and who's got experience and somebody I can lean on.
And it was interesting to hear Arthur Smith say that, because obviously a first-time head coach, he's an offensive guy. You heard him say there he's going to be calling the plays next year for the Falcons. And we speculated, you know, bringing in Dean Pease and him coming out of retirement, obviously you have full trust in that guy if you're Arthur Smith to come in and handle his business on the defensive side of the ball. How big a deal do you think that is for Arthur Smith in terms of being able to come in, focus on what he's good at, being the CEO of a football team for the first time, and obviously the duties he's going to have offensively on that side of the ball, to just be able to have Dean Pease there and have full trust that everything that you need to get done on the defensive side of the ball is going to get done, because Dean Pease, obviously, a lot of experience in that area, a lot of successful experience.
Yeah, it's big, especially if you're planning on calling plays. If you're planning on calling plays, I mean, to me, that means, like, you can't just be a CEO head coach during the week either, you know? I mean, you've got to be way more with that side of the ball. So yeah, if that's what you're going to be and you feel like you can just hand off your defense, then that's got to be a good feeling. And if not, and you weren't sure about your DC, then that could really disrupt things. So it allows him to do what he wants to do. I'm not a huge fan of the head coach who calls plays. Josh Heupel will be that, by the way, with the Vols. But, you know, if it's one of your real strengths, it works for some people.
I mean, it's working for Andy Reid right now.
It is.
Matt LaFleur.
It has for quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're really good at it, then it's like, hey, go to your strength, you know. I think ideally you delegate that. But, Doug Peterson's been the same way, right? Doug Peterson, which was a great thing in the NFL until recently. Some of those guys they have a knack for it, and clearly we've seen that from Arthur Smith.
We have, and if you missed the interview yesterday with Arthur Smith, you can check it out on thegamenashville.com, also on Apple and Spotify as well. Great conversation with new Atlanta Falcons head coach Arthur Smith. And one of the things I was interested to get into with him is Matt Ryan and just how he views Matt Ryan. And obviously, like right now, I mean, you're not going to tip your hand either way if you're Arthur Smith. Like, if you're planning on drafting a quarterback and if those are conversations you've already had, obviously he's not going to talk about that at this point. But I am very fascinated to see what the Falcons do this year with Matt Ryan and in the draft. Like, do you go ahead and draft his eventual replacement? That's going to be very fascinating to me. Or if you're Arthur Smith, do you feel good enough about Matt Ryan that he can still win at a high level for the next 3-4 years, and you build your offense with some other pieces, or maybe spend your first-round pick on defense? That's going to be very fascinating to see what Arthur Smith and the Falcons decide to do there.
Yeah, they're very interesting, because Matt Ryan could be in that mix of quarterbacks on the move. And although I think Matthew Stafford is more, you know, a better option, I mean, I think there could be certainly a market for Matt Ryan. And, you know, if that's the case, you know, would the Falcons look to Justin Fields? I know a lot of Falcons fans would love to see Justin Fields. I know, you know, Mel Kiper's mock, I think he had Fields going to the Lions at 7.
Yeah.
Which is low, but you never know. That the Falcons are going to be a key to how a lot of that, the draft goes.
So when we come back, the Predators are 7 games into the season, 2 wins in a row against Chicago, and right now in first place in the Central Division. What have we learned about this team through the first 7 games? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
First shootout of the year for either club. Here's Duchesne moving in. Hesitating, his backhander. He goes top shelf. And the Predators take a 1-0 lead. Matias Janmark now. Left-hand shot moves in. Saros coming out. And Saros makes the stop. And the Predators win in the shootout. All I do is win, win,
win, no matter what. Another big win last night for the Nashville Predators. A 2-1 win in a shootout against the Chicago Blackhawks. And the Preds sweep the series with the Blackhawks. They've won two in a row. And 4-3 on the season. Right now, Joe, in first place in the Central Division, seven games into the season. So, obviously, very early. And there is a varying degree of games played right now in the Central Division. You've got the Blue Jackets and the Preds with seven. The Blackhawks have played eight. The Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers have played three. And Tampa Bay Lightning have played four. So, not really much to make of the standings right now at this moment. But seven games in for the Nashville Predators. What stood out to you so far about this group and this team?
Well, I think that the concerns about enough offense are real. And I think the hope for a more responsible team in the defensive zone, so far, I think that's been fulfilled. I think the whole harder to play against thing has been fulfilled. And obviously the special teams have been a real problem. So you fix that, figure that out. And I think there's a lot to like. I like both goaltenders so far too. Again, it helps to have guys helping you out, which didn't have, like, things went sideways too often like that last year. But I think for the most part, it's similar to what we thought and what they were saying could happen.
I thought it was important to respond with two wins against Chicago. And you look at both of these games, neither one of them are pretty. And I know a lot of Predators fans, I mean, they look at the Chicago team. And look, Predators fans aren't stupid. It's easy to look at the Chicago team and think, yeah, they're not very good. They're not playing very well. They don't have a whole lot of talent on that roster. Outside of Alex DeBrincat, who's not playing right now because of COVID, and Patrick Kane. I mean, there's not much there, especially up front for the Chicago Blackhawks. And you take them to overtime one night and win, have to come back in the game to do so. And then last night, you finally score the first goal of the game, and then a few minutes later, you give up the equalizer, and it takes a shootout to win the game in some very hairy moments in overtime as well for the Predators. But they find a way to get it done. And Predators forward Matt Duchesne, a big goal last night in the shootout. He talked about the importance of bouncing back with these two wins against the Hawks. Here's what Matt Duchesne had to say.
I mean, I think we got rewarded for playing good hockey. And again, I don't think last night should have gone to overtime. Their goalie played great and we couldn't find it. And tonight, you know, they had a better game tonight. They pushed back harder tonight and they were definitely stingier, didn't give up as much, but we imposed some will on them again tonight. And they didn't, you know, 42 shots, score one goal. I mean, that's not going to happen very often. So you always see weird stuff in the first 10 games of the season, every single year. It's clockwork and eventually the real stuff rises to the surface. And I think for us, you know, we just got to continue to, you know, I don't think we're getting frustrated. And I know guys probably internally are wanting to score and wanting to produce. And I know myself, you know, as being one of them, but at the same time, I'm relaxed in terms of where our game's at, you know, as individuals and as a team. So we feel good. And we got big road trip coming up against, you know, obviously the defending champs and another great team in Florida. So we got to be ready to go.
So that was Matt Duchesne after the game last night. And it's interesting, you hear him talk there, and right now the Predators are going through it offensively. There are a lot of chances they're getting. These last two games especially, I mean, there's a ton of shots on the board, a ton of quality looks on the board as well, and not a lot of goals to show for it. I mean, you've got three goals scored the other night, two in regulation, one goal scored last night in regulation on 40 shots. So, I mean, obviously, the chances you feel okay about, the finish has not been there. If you're the Predators, how concerned would you be about that part of it moving forward, given what we thought we knew about this team heading into the season anyway, and how offense at times may be hard to come by from a depth perspective?
Yeah, well, it's good to have Cousins score last night. You were playing against a goaltender playing very well, I thought. You want to see Duchesne bury some shots. I feel like he's playing well. I feel like Duchesne is right there. You want to see Johansson take opportunities to score. I mean, this is, see, to me, like, Johansson, I think he's playing well, but Like last year was like everything, like what's going on.
Yeah.
Before that, it was shoot more. Now I think we're back to playing well, but shoot more, attack more, try to score more. Because, yeah, you don't, you're not going to have, I mean, you just, are, you have to lean so heavily on, especially I think, well, we always talk about the top four forwards, but I think Granlund right now really showing signs that he's going to have a good year and be productive. And you need that for sure. Because here and there, you get a Cousins last night and you get a Grimaldi, a Sissons, but I mean, you're going to, you really need those big money guys to produce. And so far that hasn't happened, but I feel like there's good signs that, you know, a breakthrough could be coming for some of them.
Well, and the other part of this is Victor Arvidsson as well. I mean, Forsberg's off to a great start. Arvidsson's got 5 points in 7 games, just 1 goal in those 7 games. He had about 5 looks last night that I don't know how he didn't score. But there was one towards the end of the third period.
Oh, man.
Where he had basically a slam dunk in front of the net. And it was interesting. Like
he pulled it.
It's almost like he got out too early on it, and the angle of the stick was almost completely just facing the other direction. And I think you tweeted this out. It did look like a kind of a foul ball down the third baseline. He pulled it so hard. And that was one of those ones like they isolated him going back to the bench, and just the look on his face. Arvidsson's had a few of those where he's had some great opportunities, just not falling for him. That's been the story for a lot of the top guys so far.
Is that gripping the stick too tight? Is that what they talk about? The hockey cliche of
could
all
be.
Cliches?
I think with Arvidsson sometimes he's wanted to like shoot it through somebody's chest from 6 feet away, rather than just, you know, shoot, man. Like how many times do we see he did it like 3 times last night? He's got this rush opportunity, and instead of like trying to cut to the net, he just winds up and cranks it. And look, a lot of times it works out for him.
That's worked
out.
He's
got a heck of a shot. But there are some times where I'm like, dude, you got a lot of speed. Just go to the net, man. You don't have to crank it from the circle every time.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's definitely had a lot of chances. I think Arvidsson and Deshane in particular.
Yeah.
Like some that they, I'm sure, go back and watch and say, you know, either they didn't quite execute or just had bad luck.
Well, that's good news for Arvidsson because last year, I mean, let's be honest, for most of the year, he wasn't even really getting chances. I mean, he's a guy, he's always had a lot of shot volume, a lot, you know, he's not afraid to shoot. He shoots from everywhere. And last year, and I think it's obvious, it was because of injury. He just was not creating the same amount of chances. To me, it's a great sign that he's creating these chances. Eventually, they're going to fall through for him. I feel the same way about Matt Duchene. He's creating a lot of chances. I do agree, Johansson, he needs to shoot more. And look, he's never going to be the guy that shoots as much as you want him to shoot. I mean, I think we know that about him at this point. But Eddie Olczyk last night on the broadcast, I mean, he pointed out there's an example of Johansson with the puck behind the net. He's coming around. There's really nobody in his path to go to the net. And instead of trying to take it to the net, you know, he's looking for the pass. And eventually he makes this, like, turnaround pass slash shot towards the middle of the ice. And it's just a broken play from there. Cousins has the puck on the doorstep last night on the power play. There's a wide open lane to the net. He doesn't take it. He goes for that quick one-touch pass instead. And John Hines talked about it, you know, after the Dallas game on Sunday, how sometimes they've been guilty of trying to execute that perfect shot and get that perfect chance. And when you're going through it right now offensively, sometimes the solution is just shoot everything possible and go to the front of the net, try to get one of those dirty goals. I'd like to see more of that from the Predators.
And that is, I mean, how often has that sentence been said over the years? And in some years, like, okay, do they have the guys to do that? You know, do they, you know, that was a couple years ago. Like, got to get somebody who can carve out some space up there. Thing about Arvidsson is, I agree, he looks fast again. You know, he looks explosive again, which is great. He didn't look that way last year. He looked more that way in the bubble. Also, like, whenever he goes to the front, it's like, man, don't get that dude hurt, because people love taking shots at Arvidsson. I mean, they take shots. They don't – he bothers them. He's a pest to them, and he's easy to push around, you know. This is where what we talked about earlier, where, you know, you need to be able to intimidate people away from messing with your stars. Maybe this team will be better at that.
And then a lineup change last night for the Predators. Jared Tenorti makes his season debut. Mark Borowiecki out of the lineup last night. Tenorti, 4 shots on goal, 13 minutes of ice time. Thought he played pretty well last night. The defenseman as a whole, outside of a massive penalty kill mess up on Friday against Dallas, I think 5-on-5, the defensemen have been really good so far. The defense as a whole has been excellent, I think. And that's a big positive to take away if you're the Predators through the first seven games.
And it should be sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the hope is you keep that up and some of these guys get some offensive breakthroughs.
Yep, and Dante Fabbro got banged up a little bit last night in the game, but stayed in the game. Looks like he's going to be okay. We've seen some examples this year of, at times, switching up to D pairs, not permanently, but throughout the course of a game. We've seen some examples of Fabbro playing with Josi, Ekholm back with Ellis. It's not been a permanent thing, but some versatility involved. Todd Richards coming in and kind of changing things up that way. So going to be fascinating to see how the defensemen are able to hold it together as the season goes on. A very compact schedule coming up, especially in the next week or so. I mean, you've got this road trip to Tampa and then Florida and then the next week at home. I mean, you've got, you know, game after game after game at home that week. So going to be very interesting to see how the Predators handle that part of it. And speaking of that, Predators head coach John Hines set to join us in the next segment. We'll get into all of that with him coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Two big wins for the Nashville Predators in the last couple of days against the Chicago Blackhawks. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Predators head coach John Hines. John, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us.
Great. I'm doing well. Hope you guys are good, and look forward to talking some hockey with you.
Absolutely. So, John, let's start there. Back-to-back wins against the Blackhawks and games where you guys had a ton of chances offensively. Great goaltending play by Chicago on that front. How important were these two games in terms of sticking with the process, making sure you continue to do the right things, and ultimately being rewarded at the end of the day?
Yeah, they were big wins for us, obviously, coming off of the Dallas series. You know, we felt that the Dallas series, our special teams really, really struggled, but we liked a lot of things we did 5-on-5. But I think early in the season, particularly with no preseason games, you know, you do have to get rewarded for the things that you are doing well to keep belief in what you're doing. And we're still trying to really build the identity. You know, you're coming into a season where there's no preseason games. So, and we have a lot of new guys. So the thing I've really liked is just we've stayed with it. I think you're really starting to see an identity in the way that we want to play with our offensive attack, offensive zone time, the structure that we're playing with. I think the mental toughness and focus, as you said, we've been in some one goal games, where we've been able to just stay with the process and, I think those are good steps for our team in a young season.
Some guys last night, John and Matt Duchene with us yesterday, have mentioned fragility last year and comparing it to this year. Do you feel like, you know, whatever you want to call it, mental fortitude in those, you know, in those tight games or when things don't go well, has improved? You see that out there?
I do see it, yeah. You know, it's still a work in progress. Now, I'd say in this past series with Chicago, yes, I did. You know, where we didn't, you know, sometimes we got behind, or they tied the game later, last night's game, and we kept going through it. I thought a couple times there were points in the Dallas series where I could see we got taken off our game a little bit, particularly when the penalty kill had struggled. I thought it bled into other parts of our game. We're understanding that that's one segment of the game, but that can't bleed into the 5-on-5 play or the power play or whatever it is. So I do think it's definitely improved. I think it's something that we've all talked about for a while with the returning players. I think some of the newer players that we've brought in are, you know, competitive, mentally focused guys, mentally tough guys. So I think that also helps. And it's a big part of what we want to be as a group. So, I think that's why the guys feel it, and when we're in the situations where it does require it, it's something that we talk about and emphasize.
Predators head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And John, you mentioned going on the road. Obviously, a different set of circumstances on the road this year with COVID and the protocols in place. How much different was it going on the road? What did you guys take away from that experience that you're going to take with you into next week going to Florida?
Yeah, it was very different, and I think it was something where I think we learned some lessons, and in that, although it was only a 4-day road trip, you know, it's very different in the sense that you can't, once you're in the city you're in, you know, you can't spend time together in hotel rooms. So everyone's kind of, when you go back to your room, you're isolated. It's not like guys can hang out and play cards or whatever they do. If you do that, you have to do it like in a team meeting room. You're not allowed to go out to restaurants. You're not allowed to go, even if you go out for a walk and a guy wants to have a coffee on an off day and go to Starbucks and, you know, something you do normally, we can't do that. So it's a challenge, I think, to keep everybody together and stimulated, particularly on days off where they're not just in the hotel room all day long or in the hotel all day long. And it's a little bit challenging. So I think we're going to try to do some different things, maybe as a team or collectively on this road trip. That's a little bit longer down to Florida.
Things as a team recreationally are like more in film sessions. I mean, I'm sure coaches are like, hey, the more in film, the better, right? I mean, what kind of things you have in mind?
I think we give them enough film sessions. I don't think I can give them any more than that. But No, more socially, you know, if just to find things to be able to do, you know, like, even with our guys, maybe you have to, you know, we have to put together something where, like, there's a movie night and we get popcorn brought in, or you do, like, just things where they can, we can be together, you can do things, you can socialize, and it's not just, you know, meetings, film session, and then back to your hotel room, and then it's game and practice. Like, there has to be some, it felt a little bit like you were locked down a little bit, where you were just confined to the hotel, and even those restrictions are a little bit more stringent than they normally would. So I think it's more the social things or having fun, in those, giving them different options to be able to do things as a group.
John, obviously some big saves last night from UC Saros, also from Pekka the other night as well in the game against Chicago. 7 games in, what have you thought of your goaltending tandem so far?
I thought the goaltending's been good. You know, it's nice that Pex has come in and played well. You know, like we said, he seems refreshed. He's in a really good place, I think, in his life personally and in his game. So it's nice that he can come in and play well and win some games. Juice has been very consistent. You know, I think even that game in Dallas where we gave up some goals, I thought they were, I don't think it was on him. I thought they made some hard plays that were tips and probably on us that were in front of them. So it's nice. We knew coming in you were going to need these guys to be able to play well because of the condensed schedule. It's nice that they are, and it's always good when they start out, when they get off to a good start themselves, because it's their confidence level, but it's also the confidence level in the team in them, and that's something that you need to have to win.
So, John, as you've analyzed, you know, special teams, as I'm sure you've done thoroughly here, is your concern level high? Are you, you know, you look at Dallas, is it sort of some bad bounces, good execution on their part, or do you have a long way to go to get those shored up?
You know, I think the penalty kill is taking, took on water early there, and it was, you know, we changed some things. You know, Todd and Dan came in, and I mean, these guys are great coaches. I mean, Todd's won a Stanley Cup. He's been a head coach in the league. He's been tremendously successful. Dan Hynos, the same thing. You know, he's a penalty killer when he played. I mean, these guys know what they're doing. We've talked about it collectively as a staff, and I think we made some changes to certain things. We have new guys, and again, I think there was some systemic changes to what we were doing. You didn't have any preseason games to do it, and to be honest, unfortunately, I mean, Dallas took advantage of some of the details that we needed to have shored up, but we got exposed on it. We fixed it. We worked on it. I thought it took a really good step last night, and both the power play penalty kill need to continue to get better. But I don't believe that the penalty kill is far off from really, really being a strong asset for us. I think on the power play, we have to get our conversion rate up. You know, we are generating chances. We are generating offensive zone time. I think when you look at the power play, you know, if you guys are watching it, you know, we're in the zone. We're creating chances. We're spending time there. It's not where you're in and out, in and out, in and out. And it's like an energy detriment to your team either. We got to work on some conversion and how can we get some of those high danger chances in the net.
Predators head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And John, it's been interesting to watch 5-on-5 defensively. I mean, I think it's been pretty outstanding so far for the most part, both from the forwards and the defensemen. And we talked about it a little bit last night after the game, but just what are you seeing in terms of the buy-in and the execution level out there defensively, especially at even strength?
Yeah, you know, it's something that we've really talked to the team about coming into the season was that, you know, I think the Predators have always been, you know, from the red line in, meaning the offensive zone, it's been go, 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 and attack, attack, attack. But the red line back, there needs to be a commitment level. And when you're in your own zone, you know, you have to be fully committed. And that's where probably the biggest part of structure system takes place is when you're kind of coming into your defensive zone and you're in your defensive zone. And, you know, we talked this year a lot about we don't want to defend. Defend is you can kind of follow people around and you spend time there. We want to check, which is more we want to end plays. We want to play quick. We want to play physical. We want to have a layers of defense. So if there's a breakdown, it's not just one guy's beat and they're there. You have some, they got to get through layers of defense. But the biggest thing is the commitment is you got to play fast. You have to play physical. You have to end plays. And then the other two parts we've talked about is our net front defenses. You know, we need to make it hard to get to our net front. There should be no free looks. It should be hard to get from the corners to our net front so our goalies can have clear sight shots on the puck and then a commitment to blocking shots. When you play defense, penalty kill or power play, or in the defensive zone, you have to have a commitment to block shots. The more shots you block, the less shots that get into that danger zone area on your goalie.
So, John, last two nights, obviously, you go into overtime. We were talking earlier on the show. I know we all love the three-on-three. I mean, I think it's fascinating to watch. I could watch it all day. It's also almost exhausting just to watch it. I can't imagine with some of these guys at times. Do you like the three-on-three? And what's it like coaching the three-on-three?
I do like the three-on-three. I think it's exciting. To be honest, I think sometimes it's harder because a team can lose a point on three-on-three, you know, as opposed to five-on-five. But I understand in the regular season, it would just be exhausting if you get five-on-five games and you might never score. But the three-on-three is exciting. And it's, I think you have to have certain types of players that can play the three-on-three. Obviously, they have to be able to speed, smarts. And the mindset changes from five-on-five to three-on-three. It's all about, three-on-three is all about possession. You know, not creating a ton of chances, but creating high danger chances because once you give up possession of the puck, it's really hard to get it back. So I do enjoy coaching it. It's just a lot different than what the philosophies are 5-on-5, but it's exciting hockey. There's always scoring chances and, I'm glad we came up on the right end of it on the first night.
John, last thing for you here. Obviously, Mikael Granlund coming back into the fold on Friday night. Two goals since that time and generating a ton of chances. What have you liked about Granlund's game? And really, since you've taken over as head coach, why do you think he's been as successful as he has?
Well, I just think he's very smart. He's extremely competitive. He's quick and he's consistent. And he's just this guy. Like, you can play him in every situation. I can play him on wing. He can play on the penalty kill. Plays on the power play. And, you know, one of the things he does is he earns his ice time. Like, when I first came in, you know, a year ago, we talked to the guys and say, like, it's a clean slate. So whatever is going on in the past is going on in the past, but this is how it's going to work. Like, you got to earn your ice time. We got to develop a trust. I got to see where it is. And he took that opportunity. And with his work ethic, competitive level, his skill set, and he doesn't let up. He never gives you an opportunity to say, you know what, I'm going to move him here. I'm not going to give him this. He just consistently plays well. And what I've seen this year is I've seen even a better version. You know, I just think he looks faster. He's stronger. He's really, really confident with the puck. And, you know, you're seeing a guy that's at the top of his game right now.
Predators head coach John Hines has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. John, great stuff. Appreciate you taking time to join us. And enjoy that Florida weather coming up this weekend in the mid-70s. Jealous about that.
I will. It'll be a great trip.
Absolutely. John Hines has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. The Predators taking off to Tampa Bay to play this weekend, and then the Florida Panthers next week. So a little bit of action on the road coming up for the Nashville Predators. When we come back, we'll react to some things John Hines had to say there, and also some news on the coaching front from Jeremy Pruitt as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in every weekday morning at 8:45 when the Preds have a weekday game for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The next opportunity to participate will be on Monday morning, so make sure you're tuning in for that. And tough blow for Mike yesterday. Victor Arvidsson had a ton of looks yesterday in the game. Didn't quite get it done. Had one. I thought the slam dunk towards the end of the third period when he's right on the doorstep. I thought he was going to get it done there, and the Preds Pick to Click from our listeners was going to continue on. The streak continues, but not to be yesterday.
I keep thinking one of you will ever get one, but well, I don't know. Yeah, guess not. Huh?
Not going well.
I mean, if I keep picking Matt Duchene, eventually he's going to score, right?
But if you keep picking him and he keeps not scoring, at some point he's going to blame you. So yeah, you got to
probably.
Yeah,
there's a
too.
Balance involved here.
Probably,
as well.
I'll probably hear about that next Wednesday at 8:45.
You probably will. So,
but as long as he sticks to the process, I think he'll get one down.
Yes, absolutely. So we had John Hines on in the last segment, and it's interesting to hear him talking about the defense part of this. And I think the phrase he used there is very interesting in terms of we don't want to defend, we want to check. And that is interesting. I mean, you look at the Predators right now starting in the neutral zone, and they highlighted this on the broadcast last night. With Mike Babcock in studio on NBC Sports Network.
Which is weird, by the way.
It's very weird. I actually thought he's pretty good.
He's always been a good talker. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's
he's so much better than Milbury.
Yes.
So would a wet sock be better than that guy, too? But
yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Babcock's had his issues, but I think it will be good. It'll be good analysis.
Well, he was breaking down, like, you know, the Predators' forecheck last night and, like, Yakov Trenin chasing after people and pushing them back into their defensive zone. There is a buy-in level defensively. And, look, there's still some issues with this Predators team and things that they're going to have to work out all season long. You heard John Hines talk about the penalty kill and the power play. There's still a long way to go in those two areas. 5-on-5 defensively, I think they played just about as well as you could have hoped for to begin the season. That to me is a huge building block. I said it before the season. That's got to be how you play if you're this team. You have an obvious strength there, especially with your defensemen. You've got to play that way. There's got to be a commitment level defensively. And so far, I've seen that at 5-on-5. If you do that enough 5-on-5, I think you're going to like your results most of the time at the end of the season, just based on how good I think they are on that part of their game defensively.
Yeah, and Trenin, by the way, as a guy, I just feel like he's got to be out there. Like
He's been pretty good.
I'm a big fan of his game and what he brings, and obviously you think back to last year, some of his willingness to be aggressive, you know, after the whistle. I don't think that's a bad thing to have out there.
No, I think he's been really good. That line, I mean – you've got Brad Richardson, Yakov Trenin, Matthew Olivier out there. I mean, a guy that hasn't been in the lineup in three of the last four games, Rocco Grimaldi. And he's a guy that's turned into a fan favorite and has been, you know, out there, one of their best goal scorers, one of their best consistent players last year in this lineup. And right now, he's having a tough time getting in there.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that, but hey, you know, you gotta earn your spot. And when you have a lineup and you have enough depth, maybe they don't have a lot of depth of scoring, but when you have forwards that you can interchange like that, creates competition and should raise performance.
So obviously some news yesterday on the coaching front for Tennessee. They hired Josh Heupel, a former Tennessee head coach, also on the move yesterday. Jeremy Pruitt apparently becoming a defensive assistant with the New York Giants. Now, a guy already on staff as an offensive analyst for the New York Giants, Derek Dooley.
Amazing.
So you've got Pruitt and Dooley riding with the Giants in the NFL. A Vol fan's dream. God. What a combo that is.
Is there any way the Giants could lure Butch there? I know he just got the Arkansas State job, but like,
oh man.
Can you imagine? What are those guys going to talk about? And think about, you know, they were Tennessee coaches not too far removed. How different are those personalities? Just Dooley and Pruitt.
Dooley, as bad of a head coach as I think he was on the field, by far, like maybe not with Kiffin, but of the other three, the most entertaining by far. Like Heupel's not going to be entertaining.
Ugh.
Butch Jones was, I mean, he was entertaining in one way because of how corny the dude was. Jeremy Pruitt was just awful in terms of that setting. Derek Dooley was pretty awesome
I mean, the Rommel jokes, the binoculars up on his face like this.
Shower
etiquette.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of things going on with Derek Dooley that if he was a good head coach, I think he would have been one of the most popular coaches in Tennessee history just based on his personality. He was great.
Too bad. Other than the whole coaching thing.
Yeah, other than that part.
He was awesome. So it was Jeremy Pruitt's going right, like, and of course I had to tweet this, like going right to like the Chili's or the Red Lobster in Times Square.
Oh, yeah.
Just like wide-eyed, just walking around New York. You're going to find, oh, New York pizza. That's what someone tweeted out to Michael Scott. You know, oh, I like to go to New York for my Italian New York pizza. Sbarro, baby.
Asparagus. What is that? That's asparagus.
They got a lot of that in New York City.
Yeah, they do. You talk about a culture shock. Going from Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, spending some time in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, now New York City. Quite different.
Does Pruitt going this route? Because you know, I kind of thought, well, he'll be with Saban and eventually get at least a position coach gig there, whatever. But does this mean that he expects a show cause?
Maybe. Well, it could also mean like if you're another college team, or like even if you're Nick Saban, wouldn't you want to wait to see what comes out about this before you bring that guy into your program? Like obviously he knows Pruitt,
yeah,
and he's familiar with him, but like. If it comes out and details come out in the next few weeks that it's just egregious stuff he was doing, maybe you want to keep that guy a little distant.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like the Saban real talk conversation with him is, hey, dummy, I taught you how to do this right.
Oh, I know.
What are you doing?
I'm aware. I'm just saying from a perception standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to have integrity.
can't break
NCAA rules. That would be a lack of integrity.
What do you think that Jeremy Pruitt's going to do with the Giants, like a defensive assistant? So, like, there's no specific, you know, role that's been announced yet with him. Like,
so do we think he's going to be a position coach?
Maybe.
Yeah. I think he'd be good. I mean, he's, you know, one thing with Pruitt is, you know, whenever they have had him, like, mic'd up on the sideline and stuff like that. I mean, no surprise. It's like, and even when he was a coordinator at Alabama, I mean, you know, the guy understands defense and explains it and coaches it well. I mean, I think that's a decent spot for him. You know?
He's going to help Daniel Jones find out where the first down marker is. Saquon Barkley coming back.
That's
in there.
Right. He teaches football very well.
He does.
He really does. So
nice educational guy, Jeremy Pruitt. It is interesting. Just I wonder what those conversations will be like between Dooley and Pruitt. Like they've got to. Obviously, I mean, they're going to sit down and talk at some point about some shared experiences at the University of Tennessee. I just imagine what those conversations are going to be like. Hopefully Dooley's doing most of the talking.
Well, I hope that they can both acknowledge that the guy who keeps looking better and better, who was between them, was way better than both of them.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, now Butch is the shining light in this whole thing. Butch is the oasis of success.
Do you think the further we get from Butch's tenure in Knoxville, the more we're going to look back and be like, man, yeah, that guy was pretty good?
Not that much, but I think maybe the jokes might fade a bit. I mean, it's so easy to have fun with Butch. But, I mean, so I remember this a couple years ago, SEC Media Days. John Adams went around to like all these media members, and it was going into Pruitt's second year, and he said, "Okay, Butch won 34 games at Tennessee. Butch was 34-27, 34 games. Will Jeremy Pruitt be over or under?" And my dumb self went over.
Catch.
Yeah, went over. Boy, do I feel stupid now. So yeah, he's at 16. Oh, okay. Without looking, who had more wins at Tennessee, Pruitt or Dooley?
Dooley.
No.
Really?
Dooley with 15.
He only had 15
wins?
Oh,
yeah. Pruitt with 16.
God.
So Pruitt's got the bragging rights, baby. And between them, they don't add up to Butch.
Oh.
Butch, you are. You were the guy, Butch. I mean, seriously, would Tennessee fans, would they not sign up right now for back-to-back 9-4 seasons?
Sure. Would you sign up to it with that guy as a coach?
Hey,
who cares who the coach is if you're 9-4?
Well, as we saw with him, there are a lot of limitations. 9-4, one of those 9-4 years was highly disappointing. Highly.
Oh, yeah.
There's no excuse for them to not be in the SEC title game that year. Absolutely zero.
Well, and then they have to win here to get to the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah. So,
but Shai Tuttle,
not all 9-4s are created equal. But yes, right now you would take 9-4. Zero questions asked, I think, if you're a Tennessee fan. When we come back, speaking of Tennessee, our man Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville will join us. He was there for the Josh Heupel press conference yesterday. What does he think of the hire? What were his impressions of Josh Heupel? We'll get into all that next with Trey. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.